Well, thank you, friends, and thank you, choir, for joining us here. Paul was welcomed with unusual kindness. I've been welcomed with the usual kindness at St. Matthew's, and thereby hangs a tale because, as we'll see a little later in our thinking this morning, the kindness was a surprise on that occasion. It wasn't a surprise on this occasion, but it was very welcome indeed. Now, we Brits, and I know Brits is made up of many different cultures now, but we Brits have a long love affair with the sea, don't we? Let's think. Britannia rules the waves. I do like to be beside the seaside, messing about on the river. We like the sea. We like boats. We like the idea of the seaside holiday. The sea is a friend to us, and even if we are landlubbers from Surbiton, we still think we're part of a seafaring nation. The sea brought to our nation great wealth through trade, and it became a source of power during the imperial period of our history, for better and for worse. It matters to us. We like it. It's a good place. It reminds us of holidays and childhood and sunshine and fun and work and trade and affluence. But for the people of the culture of the Bible, the cultures of the Bible, the sea was something completely different. The sea was a place of darkness. The sea was a place of threat. It could rise up and engulf you. The sea could suck you in. Remember the words of the psalm, I'm drawn down into deep waters and God pulls me out. The sea was full of monsters. The sea was the flood that engulfed the world in the time of Noah. The sea was dark and a threat, not a friend, and a place of fun and work, a place of darkness and a threat. So when I read this story of Paul's shipwreck, I'm inclined to read it like the stories I read as a boy of seafaring adventures. I'll tell you in a few moments, I grew up in a seafaring family, so ships and boats were always part of my life. And so I had boys' adventures of the sea. And I read here a story of heroic manly struggle with the storm and the leader who takes charge and knows what to do and manages to rescue all the crew. It's a great story of lives saved at sea, and stories of lives saved at sea were hugely popular in this country in the 19th century when shipwrecks were still common. Those who rescued people at sea were the great heroes and became, of course, the Lifeboat Institute that we have today. So to me, and perhaps to you, it reads like a story of adventure and rescue. But for the people who wrote it and first heard it, and for Paul who experienced it, it was a story about the threat of being engulfed in darkness and the God who drew them out of it and saved them from it. Now, I have a personal story of this. I said I grew up in a family of seafarers. My father and my brother were inshore fishermen working out of Fleetwood. That was the family business. And I spent my boyhood, my youth, and some of my young adulthood on and off fishing boats, frequently going to sea and almost always being seasick. That's why I didn't become a fisherman, but, you know, a fisher of men and all that kind of thing. It is a tragedy to suffer terribly from motion sickness when you love boats and sailing, but that's how it was. And although I'd never been shipwrecked, certainly had a few accidents at sea, it was quite common on the tatty old fishing boats that we had for the engines to break down and to find yourself drifting. Every few weeks you managed to get the fishing gear tangled around the propeller, and whether you used a side trawler in those days made it almost inevitable that would happen from time to time, and you could be anchored by your own net and stuck there. Most fishing boats still carried a sail or two to get them back when they had trouble. The seamanship I learnt came straight out of the days of sail. It was very, very old-fashioned. When I read this story, the Bible, I see what the sailors are doing and say, yes, that's exactly what you would do. Yes, that's exactly what you would do next. Yes, that's what I would have done. They followed the manual of seamanship in everything that happened. But my story is that I'd been at sea with my father and brother one day just before Christmas. I think it was probably school holidays, so just a couple of days before Christmas. It was bitterly cold, and we were coming back in about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. You can only get in and out of the harbor at Fleet when the tide's full, so you just go when the tide's in. So in the coldest part of the night, And as we came in alongside a boat that was already moored up, my job was to step across in a smart and seamanlike manner with the first of the mooring ropes. Being a teenager full of confidence, I stepped across rather too soon. There was ice on the rail of the other boat, and I went right down between them into water that was well below freezing in temperature. Now, I said it was cold. I was wearing sea boots and two pairs of socks and two pairs of trousers and a vest and a shirt and a couple of sweaters and a jacket, and on top of that, oilskin waterproof gear. Oh, and of course, a hat. Must wear a hat at sea. So I went down between the two boats. And I actually remember seeing the water, a little glimmer of light as the water closed over me as I went down into it, and then it was black. I mean, this water wasn't very clean either, I have to say. It was black like a crow with its eyes shut in a black bag at the bottom of a mine with the lights turned out at the middle of the night, kind of black. Absolutely no light at all. And they say your life flashes before you when it's threatened. Mine didn't, but I remember going down and thinking, well, this is drowning, it's not so awful, it's quite peaceful. So that's actually what went through my mind. Getting to the bottom of my descent thinking, I don't want to drown, and starting to swim. I swim reasonably well, and just about getting back to the surface. But when you're wearing sea boots, and two pairs of sea boot socks, and two pairs of trousers, and two sweaters, and a jacket, and oilskins, and a hat, you don't swim too good, do you? And I could just keep my face out of the water by holding it back like that. Fortunately, the bolts didn't come together and crush me, or I wouldn't be here to tell the story at all. And my father rushed, seeing me go down, or just seeing, I think he said, just saw my hat come off as I went down, rushed, and there was nothing, he couldn't reach me, so he hung over the side of the boat, holding on to the rigging of the mast, so I could hold his feet, because I could only just stay afloat. And then my brother got there, and somebody else turned up, and it took three people to pull me out, even though they were fishermen and used to hauling nets into a boat because of the weight of all the water in the boots and the clothes. So they drew me out of the dark water. You can see where this is going, can't you? Especially if you remember the words of the psalm about the God who drew me out of the dark waters that threatened to engulf me. My father put himself down, never go in the water after somebody, by the way. You always reach for them. Hung himself down to the water in order that they could pull me out. So for me, the story of Paul's shipwreck and survival is a story about the God who reaches to us and pulls us out, reaches right down when the water threatens to engulf us, gets right down there in order that he can pull us out and save us and rescue us. For me, it is a profound story of salvation, a parable, a metaphor of the God who reaches into everything that threatens to engulf us, gets down there with us, and draws us out. Now, I do need my piece of paper at this point, because I've got a quote on it. I don't know where any of you have ever heard of or read anything by Nadia Boltz-Weber, an American Lutheran pastor, written quite a number of books, one of the most exciting preachers in America at the moment, and she has a dramatic life story. But in one of her books, she says this: God simply keeps reaching down into the dirt of humanity and resurrecting us from the graves we dig for ourselves through our violence, our lies, our selfishness, our arrogance, and our addictions. And God keeps loving us back to life over and over. Well, there it is. The God who reaches down into the darkness of the grave that threatens to engulf us. All of us at times feel like our life is overwhelming us, like we cannot cope, like we are sinking. We use it as a metaphor, a parable, a saying, don't we? We've got into deep water and trouble. And here is a story of the God who reaches down to us in deep water and pulls us up and rescues us. And then Paul and his friends and the crew get ashore in the best way that they can. The sailors had done just the right thing. I said they do all the right things, apart from trying to abandon the ship, which doesn't actually make any sense at all. The last thing you do, the very last thing you do, is to leave the ship. It's always safer to be on the ship than to go into the boat. So that's very, very odd in the story. But everything else makes perfect sense. They're being driven downwind. The wind is now so strong, there comes a point with the sailing ship where you cannot control it at all. All it will do is drift down the wind. You cannot sail it. There's no direction anymore once the wind reaches a certain really catastrophic force. And they're in the situation that every sailor, everybody under sail, dreads and fears. It's what sailors call a lee shore. The wind is blowing directly towards the shore, and they have no control of the direction of the ship. It can only go downwind. They can go downwind quicker, they can go downwind slower, but they can only go downwind. So they will inevitably hit the island. So they look for the best place, and they see a sandy beach, and they do the right thing. They get some sail up, and they drive the ship as hard as they can at the shallow sandy beach so that it will ride up the beach as far as possible, so they're as near as the shore as they can be to get off. The ship is lost. They cannot rescue the ship. The waves will smash it to pieces now on the sand. That happened to me, but I've seen boats that it has happened to where I grew up, where they'd broken down, usually people who didn't know the area, and they got into shallow water onto hard sandbanks, and the boat is just smashed to pieces. It's what sailors say, it's been bounced or pounded on the sand like this by the waves, up and down. So they've only got a matter of minutes to get off the boat, but they've got a chance because they're now in really shallow water. So they manage somehow, everybody, even those who can't swim, to get ashore because the water is now shallow enough to wade through the waves. And there they are met with unusual kindness. Now, we say that you can know people by the company that they keep. If that is true, I would stay away from God because God keeps some very bad company indeed. Just look at the Bible. You know, you see what the friends of God are like. You wouldn't necessarily want them as your friends. There's liars and cheats in there. There's the outcast and the downcast and the broken and the forgotten and the neglected and the hopeless. And God has them as his friends. He does not keep good company. Shipwrecked sailors didn't necessarily expect a good reception. That is why the kindness is unusual, unlike your kindness, which was usual and expected. I grew up in Fleetwood. Just down the road is Blackpool, which you may know better. The top end of Blackpool, there's a stop on the tram line, almost the last stop, called Gin Square. It was a little village, a little fishing village in the old days. And in the 19th century, locally Gin was known as pea soup. And the reason was that a little coasting ship carrying a cargo of dried peas came ashore there. And a lee shore, driven in by a wind, blows onto the land and you can't get away from it, and was wrecked. For a seaside community, a shipwreck was a gift of the sea to the poor people. And they lived off pea soup all winter in that village from this cargo. So the ship's cargo was seen as a bounty of the sea. The ship was seen as something to take apart for its canvas, its wood, its rope, to repair your fishing boats. It was seen as a gift of the sea. Whatever the law said, that was the law for fishing people on the coast. And sometimes the survivors were seen as people to rob. And sadly, that happened a lot. There were deliberately caused wrecks in history, in places. People who deliberately lured ships ashore in order to salvage the ship and to rob those who were on board. So seafarers had no great expectation of kindness when they were shipwrecked. So they are surprised to receive this kindness. It's unusual. And they're all the more surprised because, for Paul, there is no kinship with the people of the island of Malta. They're not part of his clan, his family, his tribe. They're not Jewish. They know nothing of Jesus. Never heard of him. They probably know nothing at all about Israel's God, the creator of the world. They're pagan people, and not related to Paul and his friends by shared faith or by family ties or heritage or culture. There's no particular reason of the reasons that people usually had in the ancient world for them to show kindness. I said God chooses unusual friends throughout the Bible God chooses people who seem surprising to do his will and purpose. And so these people become the ones who give unusual kindness to Paul and his companions. It's a story of salvation, of being drawn out of the deep waters. Today, in Unity Week, we're asked also to think about it as a story of the God who makes it possible for people who have nothing in common with each other. Did they even speak a common language? Well, probably enough of them spoke Greek to understand each other, but they wouldn't really have a common language. Yet they are shown welcome and hospitality and true selfless love. The God who can do that for people who have nothing in common, who can make them show unusual kindness and love to one another. How much more can the God who can do that enable an unusual, a supernatural kindness between us who share together as the people of Jesus and in the family of God? This is what the God who reaches down can do for us. He raises us up out of deep water. He shows us unusual kindness that we might become a people of extraordinary kindness and love in his world. Amen.